Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. And we're getting some feedback from something.
Definitely.
Here.
I think you've got this microphone right here on number three.
Okay. Nope. Number three's off.
Well, that's fascinating.
Well, we're getting something here.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You're turning that volume up on your headset.
Yeah, I know, so I can hear, but it's not working. We're having some technical difficulties here. Is that any better? No. So we're having some interesting technical difficulties here, to say the least, at the Personal Wealth Coach in KTEM. Whoa, what was that?
You're number two. You were turning the wrong dial. There you go. Okay. So yes, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. We are a not only a radio program with technical difficulties, but we're also an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. And the two of us here, Old Baldy and Young Baldy, are principals in said firm, the Personal Wealth Coach. We also do this weekly radio broadcast, which, if you're listening, my condolences, my deepest sympathies for having to put up with us. You must not be aware that the channels do turn, that you can't go to another station. If But we are here to talk about the economy, not about sports, unless you measure your sports winnings in dollars and cents, which case we will talk to some extent about that, not in the gambling aspect, but the investment side.
See, we figured out the reason that KTEM exists, and it is that during the week, people come in here and move the switches and knobs and plugs to new locations and do interesting things with them. And then when we come in here, there are probably a couple of hundred variable positions that all the switches and knobs and plugs have to be in. And it's kind of an exciting experience to go through them all and figure out which one was changed and where. Since some of them are unlabeled, it makes it even more interesting. And it's a mental challenge to us that we manage to overcome despite our best efforts. So you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And since I couldn't hear the early part of the show, I don't know whether my erstwhile partner here announced that we were an SEC-registered investment.
Yes, I did.
Okay, so we're properly disclosed as being regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, or not, as the case may be. And the telephone numbers to call in here, if you would like to ask us any questions about investments or the economy or things of that ilk, because that's the area in which we have some degree of expertise.
Ilk. We have expertise in ilk.
Yeah, well, that ilk. That ilk, but not every ilk. Just certain ilks. 773-1400 is the number if you're in East Bell County, in the 254 area. Yeah, wait, whatever. Anyway, it's 773-1400. Or
you can also reach us toll-free at 1-866-597-1400. We are dealing with continual shifting changes in
the switchology.
In switchology, as well as trying to figure out, you know, they switched out the wireless network here while we were gone this week. It no longer is the old one. And
so we're just having a lot of technical fun in here, and we only just have a very short time, like 5 minutes.
Less than that.
4 minutes or something like that. From
to
the time
down,
we walk
turn,
in to
turn
get everything
our computers
figured out.
On and
it's interesting. It's interesting.
It's a practice.
It's a challenge.
Keeps us
we need more
guessing.
Hands. You know, actually, I finally figured out that economists are Hindu gods.
Yes, because they have many hands.
Yes,
I think
they have
it was
lots
Nick,
of hands.
Nixon who said, I would be happy if I could find an economist.
It was Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Well, he said he would be happy if
he
could find an economist with only one hand.
He said what he needs is more one-armed economists. Because economists always tell him, but on the other hand, so that doesn't work. Yeah, I just heard that last night, by the way. Official site for that. That's the kind of things we sit around and study at great length, is who said various quotes that everybody assumes someone else said. You know, like the famous, anyway, there's quite a few quotes that we've discovered that the person who was credited for them actually didn't say them. Somebody said them long before it. So again, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. We do what we do for a living during the week is manage investment portfolios. And we've been doing this collectively and individually quite a long time. As a matter of fact, we're right at the 31-year mark for me.
I'm at 22.
Okay.
22 so years.
We could do the...
Next year it'll be 23.
We could do the totally irrelevant but interestingly collective. Sounded collective 54 years of collective...
Collectively, we have 54 years of... Yeah, if you collectively put experience together, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, that means that if you have 36-year-olds together...
Yes, together we are 72 years old. Wait, no, you're not. No, you're only 36. You
right.
lived during the same time period.
Right.
So 23 of, or 22 of the years of experience that we have was shared experience.
Shared, well, more or less. You were over in one side of the office
maybe,
a lot of that time.
Maybe less or more.
Anyway, so what happened during the week? The week did actually occur. It went through very nicely. We noticed that it had 7 or 5 days, depending on which part of the week you're looking at, with economy today. But we like to talk about one of the main indicators, since a goodly portion of the portfolios that we manage are invested in equities, which are stocks, shares in American corporations. Interestingly enough, not even the majority is there. Most of the time, I think the majority of shares occur and other things are outside of the New York Stock Exchange. But stocks, if we talk about the Dow Jones Industrial Average, were up 1.6% last week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 200 points, 1.3%. Which one was up 1.6? I think it was the S&P 500 that was up 1.6% last week. And that generally is good for our clients because our clients, without exception, have stocks in their investment portfolios. It's also a powerful indication of what collectively people who call themselves investors are doing with their money. It really boils down to something fairly simple. When more people are putting more money in U.S. equities, it's an indication that collectively – they are voting that they think the economy will be better in the future than it is today. And so far, they've pretty much been right. The perspective on that, I think, is very, very important, at least to me. And people ask me why I'm so much, you know, Jake, I was thinking about this. Why are we optimists?
I wouldn't call us that. I would not.
Well, when I say optimist, I say we are optimists. We're optimists in the sense that we think things will be better in the future than they are today. And I got to thinking about why do we believe that? Because there's so much bad news in any given moment. There's so many things going wrong in any given moment. We keep a record. You know, you record these shows.
Yep.
And you make podcasts and you go back and listen to them. And you make me listen to them sometimes, whether I want to or not.
See, I don't call it optimism.
And then I write newsletters and I can go back and see what I wrote years ago and what the conditions were years ago, and also, of course, write about the negativity at the time, what the negative opinions are at that point. And, for example, you know, we talk about it's been 31 years now since I, Jeff, started as a stockbroker. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and I remember this and made notes, and I still have those notes. The Dow Jones Industrial Average 31 years ago was breaking through, at this point, 1,000. Let me say that again. I don't mean 10,000. I mean 1,000 31 years ago. It is on the verge, on Friday, it was right on the verge of crossing through 16,000. And that's not counting invested dividends. As a matter of fact, Generally speaking, over a long period of time, the reinvested dividends in the Dow or the S&P 500 about equal inflation. So since we're not counting the dividends, invested money in the stock market, broad stock market, and this is a very generalized statement, is worth about 16 times in real terms what it was worth 31 years ago. And the stock market's not particularly high right now. Anyway, you were going to say something?
I was. The concepts that we follow here, the Dow's at, you know, you were saying 15,961. It's almost at 16,000. And you mentioned it. I listened to some of our podcasts from 2 years ago. And we said that by 2014, the Dow would be at 16,000. And people thought that was optimism. And this is the thing that I was wanted to bring back up. I mentioned it several times that I don't think this is optimism. Because we're the same people that in 2007 were saying that real estate was about to take a nosedive. We didn't expect it to cause the entire economy to crater. But we said that the real estate area and the mortgage-backed securities area and the banking sector was overpriced. It was... absurdly so.
And we were warning on collateralized mortgage obligations to stay out of them.
Yes, and we did that since 2005.
Obviously, the banks did not listen to us. Right. They did Fannie and Freddie.
So the point that I'm raising here is that while I agree with you and I do think that the future is going to be better than the past, I think that about our society and where we are right now. I certainly don't think that about parts of Africa or... parts of Mexico, or it may eventually get to be better in the future, but when I look at the facts that are on the ground right now, I only see bad things in the future there. When I look at the facts that are on the ground here, I don't see it as optimism, but to say that our children will grow up more prosperous than we are, because I'm looking around and saying all the evidence seems to be supporting it. A couple of weeks ago, we were having comments about whether or not we had more or less freedoms now than we did as children, as we were when we were children. And I got a lot of email on that. I don't know if you got to see any of it, but I got a lot of email of people saying, try buying a full flush toilet, check out a 100-watt light bulb. And they were listing a whole bunch of regulations that have been putting and laws that have been put in the books that restrict what we're allowed to buy and sell. And that implies that freedom only comes from the government. When I look around it and I say, wait a minute, after the radio program, I'm going to fly to Denver. And it's going to cost me $90 to do that. I'm going to fly to Denver and I'm going to hang out in Denver all day long. I'm going to spend the night there. I'm going to drive back down through Kansas and then down through Oklahoma and then back to Texas. In my childhood, there is absolutely no way as a percentage of income, as a percentage of daily cost of living, I could have flown to Colorado for that type of price. The prices have come down. The freedoms that I'm talking about, I think because we talk about regulations and laws so much when we're talking about what they mean and what they're implying, people tend to think that, particularly on the radio, that when we're talking about freedom, it only comes from restrictions or freedoms given by the government. And they're missing a huge point here.
I agree with you completely.
Our freedoms are completely new things that weren't on the books in any way. They weren't in anybody's imaginations. When we walk around with an iPhone or a Android or whatever smartphone you might wish to have, and you're able to figure out who the Speaker of the House was 10 years ago at a moment's whim.
And that's, you know, interesting that you should mention that Arthur C. Clarke in 1970, it was either 70 or 71, was being interviewed on television. And he said, by the end of this century, people will, or shortly thereafter, he said, people will be able to access the collective knowledge of the world instantly through satellites.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
they thought that it was going to be really expensive to do so. They thought anybody that...
No, actually, he thought it was going to be... That's what was interesting about his forecast. He said people will carry around devices with them. They will have devices in their homes that are a combination... He said a combination fax machine, copier, telephone, and television. And they will be able to access the collective knowledge of the world instantly from anywhere. Now, we're not quite there yet because anywhere runs out in several places. But I am just, I'm going to tell you, I am an optimist. I am tremendously optimistic.
And
I agree.
See,
I'm even optimistic about Mexico.
I think you are an optimist. I would not put myself in the same category. I think of myself... I don't even think of myself as a realist. I'm trying to measure, and rather than it's almost like the TSA when they're investigating an aircraft crash, I don't want to go in with a pre-existing theory.
I think that's the NTSB.
NTSB.
Yeah,
no,
TSA.
They don't do that. The NTSB. I
don't
want to go
acronyms, right?
Right. I don't want to go into a measurement of the economy or anything else with an idea that I'm trying to prove.
I'm not trying to prove. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm not suggesting you are. I'm saying this for me. I don't go in with an opinion saying I think things are going to get better. I do come to the same conclusion that you do. And I think long term, if we continue to improve in our society, then Mexico will improve, and so will huge portions of Africa and China and India, because we really are leading as far as what freedoms exist. And I don't, again, just mean governmental. I mean every other aspect of our lives. This is fascinating, just as an example of what freedoms are. When you consider our government makes laws about existing things. They don't make laws about things before they exist, except for very rarely in the cases of like cloned children. They came out and said, oh, no, you can't do that. But it's very rare for our government to say this whole area is off limits before it happens. It was very normal and is normal in certain parts of the world. It was very normal in the Soviet Union that if it didn't specifically say you could do something, then it was illegal. Where in the United States, if it doesn't say you can't do it, then you can. And that form of government, that ability for us to come up with new concepts, it leads to a lot of trouble, but it also leads to a lot of new things, a lot of new technology, a lot of new things that we never thought we'd be able to do before. I mean, I'm just laying out some of the concepts of being able to travel and such. But
the economics... Well, there's a lot. This is a very complicated area, but we have a caller on 773-1400, and you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling to ask you questions about the Federal Reserve and why it seems that the Federal Reserve is what's causing the biggest problems with our...
The big what? I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Hello?
Yeah,
hello?
We can hear you. You're just real faint.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve causing...
is the biggest problem of our devaluing of our dollar...
Wait a minute. Devaluing the dollar?
Yes.
How has the dollar been devalued?
The buying power of the dollar.
The buying power of the dollar is lower than when?
Than it was 100 years ago.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, oh, okay. Absolutely. By about 100, but the Federal Reserve hasn't even existed that long.
They didn't exist in 1913?
No.
The
Federal Reserve's control of the currency, the major powers the Federal Reserve has been given other than simply to provide a reserve for the banks, was actually a result of the massive inflation that hit the United States following World War I. Up until then, the Federal Reserve was just kind of a quiet little thing off in the corner that helped control banks. It really didn't have much to do with the regular economy. Following World War I, and right about 1918, we had about 300% inflation in about 2 years.
Now, the Federal Reserve was created by an act in 1913, and that's the number that you're talking about. You know, I mean, caller, we're not saying that it didn't exist, but that is the year that the Congress said that we need a central banking system.
Yeah, at the same time that permanent income tax was adopted, but I was just going by about a month, 5 weeks ago,
Issue that's going on right now in the economy is we're verging on the edge of deflation. There are a significant number of things. The prices are going down.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, in the last report from the Commerce Department, prices fell across the entire economy year over year, and that's scary. I mean, we're not having inflation. We're having deflation.
And this is fascinating, caller, because in the 1970s, when we had crazy inflation, it was very high inflation.
Yeah, late 1970s, early
80s. The reason why we had so much inflation is because at the time, if you look back at the headlines at the beginning of the 70s, the people were hyper aware of deflation. They were terrified of it because they remembered in their childhood living through the Depression. And so they did everything they could to keep money. The reverse of that is what's happening now. The majority of people are hyper aware of inflation because we remember the 70s. We remember that inflation could eat our lunch, basically. It can take the value of the dollar and destroy it over a short period of time. What we're seeing right now is, let's take a couple of steps back and talk about what it is that the Federal Reserve does here. Otherwise, we're just talking about punchlines, basically. The Federal Reserve Act originally was just designed to allow the banks to be regulated by an organization. In 1907, we had a panic, which caused big runs on the bank. We had another one that came in 1929. That gave the Federal Reserve a lot more power. There were new laws passed at that point. But in 1907, banks failed across the country. And there were all kinds of commissions that came together and said, well, we need to have some entity that regulates the banks and say that they don't loan out all of their money. They need to have reserves. So they called it the Federal Reserve. It's kind of interesting how that wound up being. So they said, all right, banks, you have to have reserves on hand. You can't loan out everything. And so they began regulating the banks in a much more concise way.
They had to have the actual money on hand that they were lending?
They had to have not only the money that they were lending on hand.
But they couldn't lend it all out.
They had, you know, they're only allowed to lend out a percentage of the money. And that's one of the tools that the Federal Reserve still holds is reserves. And if they expect, like in the year 2000 when Y2K was hitting, the Federal Reserve told banks that leading up to the year 2000 to hold more money in reserve just in case people all decided to show up not because of technology, but because of fear of technology on the day before Y2K and withdraw all their money.
See, the point is a bank, when you say they have to have the money, they don't actually have the money they loan out. You deposit money in the bank. No, you deposit money in the bank. Let's say you put $10,000 in the bank. You could obviously turn around the next day and go back to that same bank, having bought a car, let's say, and you wanted to borrow $20,000, and they'd loan you $20,000. Well, $10,000 of that $20,000 you borrowed was effectively your money.
Except that they couldn't loan out. If all they had was $10,000, they wouldn't be able to do that.
They would only be able to loan out about $9,000 on a good day. And they have to have capital. That's what the Federal Reserve is all about. And without it, we had the equivalent of the Federal Reserve back in the 1800s. And Andrew Jackson abolished it because he was very much a Tea Partyist back when the Democratic Party was basically the equivalent of the Tea Party today.
Yeah, it was the second bank of the United States.
And he had a personal fight with the guy named Andrew Biddle, who was the chairman. And he managed to get it abolished despite Congress. He overruled Congress.
And he had to remove a whole series of Secretary of Treasuries.
But the point is that he plunged the United States of America first into a massive runaway inflation because of the absence of a Federal Reserve, and secondly, a massive deflation followed behind it as currencies collapsed. State of Ohio went bankrupt and defaulted on its bonds, and more or less that led to the Civil War. So over time, the leaders in our nation have gotten a little smarter about this, despite all the appearances to the contrary, and they have determined that we need to have a central bank to regulate the money.
Now, let me address kind of the rote criticisms of the Federal Reserve. Thomas Jefferson was very clear many times over, saying that you don't put control of the monies of a country in the hands of a bank.
But he also, Thomas Jefferson, was firmly against joint stock companies, which today we call corporations.
Right. So just to come at this from what happened in the act and then what's been added to it since, the Federal Reserve is a private institution. And that's one of the things that is it is established by a law which basically makes it a monopoly. And there's a lot of people that have problems with that. It is a self-regulatory organization, and if you look at the investment world, there's something called FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, that is also a self-regulatory organization. It's not owned by the government. It isn't part of the government. It is established by an act of Congress to regulate. It's kind of like a guild. It self-regulates. And in the event that it doesn't regulate properly, then the government comes in and enforces it. In the case of the Federal Reserve, both the Labor Department and the IRS can go in and shut down a bank if the Federal Reserve doesn't do it.
The IRS or the FDIC?
FDIC is also a private organization. The IRS is the governmental organization
that
is allowed to go in.
The Internal Revenue Service shuts down banks?
It's very, very rare, but they can threaten that. The executive branch has in the past threatened the Federal Reserve to, you know, with certain things like that. So coming forward in time, the Federal Reserve first goal was just to protect the money supply. It wasn't to fight inflation or deflation so much, but just to say, whoa, we had a complete freeze up where everybody withdrew all their money and there was no money left. So the Federal Reserve said, first you have to have reserves. Then Congress said, well, while you're at it, since you're doing that, and these are the tools being used by other central banks to protect the buying power of their currency, the dollar in this case, your job is to fight inflation and deflation. And they've had varying degrees of success there, but their target is a light amount of inflation. What we see today, their target, they want 2%. Well, if you look at 100 years, 2% is going to make the value of our dollars be about a third of what it is today in 100 years. That means the buying power of the dollar is decaying at the target rate of the Federal Reserve. The reason why they have a target rate that will decay the dollar to a third of what it is in 100 years is because deflation is much worse. And this is the hardest thing that I have to explain to the general public, because it's so misunderstood. Deflation is really, really, really bad for low and middle income. For if you're in the middle class, even the upper middle class, anybody upper middle class and below, if you have a mortgage, deflation will eat your lunch. Inflation is actually kind of okay for the lower income and the lower middle class. It's not great. I'm sorry?
Okay, it's really okay. The reason deflation is bad. Do you have a mortgage on your house?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just say that I'm going to be extreme here, but that way you can see the example.
Yeah, go ahead.
So let's just say we had massive deflation, and we've had inflation and deflation this bad at times. And so what we have is a 50% deflation, okay, over time. So the dollar is now worth twice what it was worth before. Well, that means your pay has been cut in half, because
your employer is going to lower your pay during that
time.
And
by the way, employers have been lowering pay. What they do is they lay somebody off and then they hire somebody else at a lower wage. So your mortgage payment didn't go down, did it?
It's a 30-year fixed.
It's fixed. Right. So you've got a mortgage payment that, let's say, that was previously 15% of your income, and now it's 30% of your income. You can't afford to pay it anymore.
Do you see the problem there?
Okay.
All of your debts.
It's a little hard to understand because both of you are talking at the same time, and I couldn't really hear well. But let's use an example. A guy makes $100,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Over a period of time, is the deflation, are you saying that the value of his dollar is deflated?
No, the value of the dollar goes up in deflation.
Yeah.
Okay, it gets the value of the dollar goes up.
Price, yeah.
So he can go out and buy.
No, because his wages are going to be cut in half during that period if it's 50%. Your wages go down during your deflation. They don't go up. They go down.
Now, the dollar that you have in your hand can buy more things, but you get less dollars. This is what happened during the Depression.
How do you get less dollars if you're not making $100,000 anymore?
No, because that would be the equivalent of doubling your pay. Would your employer double your pay right now? Okay, so in order to stay even with inflation, if we have inflation, he or she will gradually raise your pay over time, right? And you expect that.
Right.
Okay, well, in deflation, and that's going on in the country today, by the way, the issue, one of the reasons we're getting an increase in productivity is employers are paying less for the same amount of work.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me explain how it happens. When you're going to Walmart or anywhere else, a Best Buy, this Christmas, and you go to get a flat screen TV, say a 42-inch flat screen TV, is it more or less expensive than it was 3 years ago?
Well, I would imagine it's less, but that's probably because of technology.
Okay, that is exactly the case. When you go to get a flat screen TV, you're buying it for less. Now, the company that made that TV and the one that's selling that TV, we're used Best Buy. If they're selling the TV and it's less expensive than it used to be, and it's expected that the rest of the year it's going to be less expensive, and so they have to actually lower their price because now the expectation is that the prices on electronics is going to come down. They have to lower their markup on that as well to stay competitive because everybody expects these prices to come down. Well, then they have to turn around to their employees, and if you think of Circuit City, you'll see what happened there. They didn't lower their prices at the same speed that Best Buy did, so they went out of business.
Okay.
They have to turn around and lower what they pay to their employees, or their employees have to sell a lot more stuff. Well, how many 42-inch TVs are you going to buy this year? That's the problem. So they have to lower the what they're paying to their employees. Now, that employee can buy more electronics with the dollar, but they have less dollars. This is a very small case, a very small one company institution where we can see what's happening with deflation. But if you look at every major area of our economy, whether it is a vehicle, a car, if you look at a car price today versus a car price 10 years ago, and you use a standard car model, say the Ford Taurus, you'll find that the prices haven't changed that much. They're almost identical. However, if you look at a Ford Taurus 10 years ago, and you look at what the gas mileage was, and if you look at whether or not it had electronic windows, if it had a USB player, if it had heated seats, you look at all the things that we have almost standardized now. It's getting more and more standards. You can go back even further back and say whether or not it had air conditioning and so on. The value that you're getting for the same dollar is more. That's deflationary. And we're not saying that inflation is not a threat. Please don't misunderstand here.
I'm trying to understand that.
But what we are saying is that there is something that is very misunderstood out there that people are very unaware of. It seems like deflation would be a good thing if your dollars are worth more. People go, why is that bad? Because we're used to getting more dollars every year based on employers giving us more. If you think of your typical union contract, it doesn't matter how well you've performed. You've been there another year, so you get an extra pay hike. If you think of the way we do our public employees, whether it's a police officer or a soldier or whatever, there's an assumption that they're going to get a raise, even if they're in the same rank and same position, that they'll get a cost of living raise. The opposite is true in deflation. Only we don't have that assumption anymore because we haven't seen deflation for 50 years. Well, we've been seeing it for the last 5 years in very small amounts. And it is one of the most terrifying things out there for the Federal Reserve. They look at it as if that happens, it can completely shut down our economy.
Is that why they're pumping in the QE3 or that's quantitative easing?
It's exactly right.
Yeah, in deflation, a lot of things happen, one of which is banks fail. A lot of banks fail, and a lot of money disappears out of the economy. And the reason banks fail is people can no longer afford to pay their loans. The loans were made at a certain value, and as deflation goes on, the value of the loan to you and everybody else rises, but you can no longer afford to pay it because you are making fewer dollars. And that is going on, and you've read the stories, I'm sure, of people who used to work and make $25 an hour, now they're making $12. This is going on all across our economy. It happens when we have rapid technological change. You're talking about technological change, right? We expect to get more value for our dollar when we go to the store each succeeding year, don't we?
Yes.
That's deflation. It used to go the other way around. And the other thing about deflation that is very dangerous is when you expect that the price will be lower in the future, do you rush in and buy something? No. You wait. And sometimes you wait a year or 2 years to buy something.
Typical statement is, I'll wait for Christmas. The prices are going to come down.
And we have become inured. That's an interesting term. That means used to. And just accepting of the fact that if we defer purchasing something, the price will be lower. And sometimes we'll just defer it a long time. Well, when we defer purchasing things, that means that there are fewer jobs to make them and fewer jobs to sell them, which causes prices to come down even further as the companies that are selling them say, listen, I got to move this stuff. I got to sell it. Therefore, I'm going to reduce the prices to get people to buy it, which causes further deflation, which causes further layoffs,
which causes less loans to be paid at banks, and so on.
And then the company can't pay back its loan on its building, and it defaults, and then the bank goes out of business. And pretty soon you have the money supply shrinking, which it has done, and you have more and more people laid off. And finally, this is the terror. In the 1930s, right around 1934, something happened that a lot of economists, and John Kenneth Galbraith is probably the most widely quoted on this, something happened that economists thought that was impossible. The economy stabilized in a depression. It stabilized there. It didn't come back. We had 30% unemployment, which, by the way, when considering
Spain or Italy, that's what they're doing.
The way our workforce is structured today, it would have been 60% unemployment because women weren't working back then. So we had 60% unemployment, the equivalent today.
And it stabilized there.
And it was just stable. And people were losing their houses, and people were literally starving. And nothing was changing. And the reason was people were, and very frankly, one of the biggest reasons, and it caused a massive turnover politically, was that Congress was terrified of inflation, and they were passing bills to protect jobs, and they were passing bills to prevent the government from borrowing money. Does this sound at all familiar to you?
The Smoot-Hawley Act was one of the Tariff Act, and then they were doing balance the budget. And if you look at the times in the history of the United States that the United States government has been completely out of debt, it's happened twice, and it was a single year, before the two greatest depressions in the history of our country.
So the Federal Reserve is not causing inflation. The Federal Reserve fights inflation, and the Federal Reserve is not the cause of the problems in the country. As a matter of fact, it's probably closer to the thing that minimizes the problems economically.
Okay, let me ask you this so I can help understand.
Okay.
25 years ago, I put $10,000 in a piece of property, paid for it.
Okay.
$10,000 in a drawer of my...
All right.
Now, the $10,000 piece of property is worth $25,000.
That's very unusual.
$10,000 is still in my drawer. It's only worth $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
no, actually, it's not.
It's actually worth less. Yeah.
You got lucky, because of the piece of real estate you were in, the demand for it for some reason or other went up. But I can also tell you, had you put $25,000 in a piece of property in a lot of the country, an awful lot of the country, particularly industrial Northeast, your $10,000 today would be worth maybe $1,000, if that much. And maybe it wouldn't be worth anything.
This is a good way of looking at it. I've spent a lot of time in Jamaica. And one of the times that I was in Jamaica, there was a trial going on for a cardiologist. And they were upset, the prosecutors were upset, that this cardiologist had so many patients that were dying. So they were prosecuting him. He's a cardiologist that was only being used to treat the worst cases. So if you looked at a general practitioner and said how many of their patients died this year, and you got 5 of 100 maybe, and then you look at this cardiologist, and this cardiologist has had 100 patients die this year. So they thought, there's obviously wrongdoing here. This is a horrible thing. It turns out that he's only working on people that were dying. It's like going to hospice and saying, these people are horrible. They can't keep anybody alive. Well, that's because they're specializing in dying people. If you think of the Federal Reserve the way you think of chemotherapy, it is not a good thing. I don't like the idea that we have to have it. But if you go around saying that chemotherapy causes cancer because every person that you've ever met that has cancer is on chemotherapy, then you're missing some cause and effect. The chemo is certainly not something that I think everybody should just go out and take a whole bunch of chemotherapy. But when it is used, it needs to be used effectively, and it's going to be used in times of trouble in the economy. So it's very easy to say, well, this is the thing that caused it.
I
see where you're going, and I need to do some more studying.
Yeah, and I, you know, just look up the Federal Reserve on Google.
Yeah.
I mean, not Google, but on and Wikipedia, and just read it. Good. Just read it on Wikipedia.
And okay. We've got some commercials to play.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Good question. Okay, bye-bye. And this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we have to move on to do some commercials here so that KTEM and Cumulus, or not Cumulus, what are we?
It's time, whatever, something whatever square.
Whatever this thing
something
is.
Square.
Yeah, whatever it is can stay in business. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we have a call on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, long-time listener. I have a question. You know, the according to the history books, people that went through the Great Depression, and I know most of them are no longer with us, but they, you know, had a fear of the banks, and they put money in the mattress, and they were scared of investing in the stock market. You know, the financial crisis that we're digging out of, everybody characterizes as the, you know, greatest financial crisis since the Great Depression. How do you think that the history books 30, 40, 50 years, 100 years from now are going to characterize this generation and their how they feel about financial situation and banks and the stock market, those kinds of things? I know that living in Texas, we didn't have the impact that a lot of the states did, but you know, during this situation, you know, you didn't see soup lines or people jumping out of buildings or selling apples on the streets of New York. So anyway, how do you think this generation is going to be characterized going forward? I'm going to hang up on this.
All right, thank you.
That was a great question.
It was a very good question. It first off, I think the history books are going to say that we handled it very well. We should have had, by economic history, a depression. We should be in a depression right now. We're not. We're crawling out of it, albeit slowly, but we're crawling out of it. And as a result of not being so severely impacted by it, we are probably going to react less to it going forward. The stock market is back to record levels, and people are coming back to the market. because the emergency actions by the federal government and the Federal Reserve very quickly yanked the stock market back up out of a horrible collapse. So I think there's a really good book by David Hackett Fisher, another one, there's several books, but basically say with each one of these cycles, we in the United States are learning from them, and they're less severe. Yeah,
there's one thing I would add to that, is that a whole generation has changed the way it looks at debt. The Generation Xers have, before they were doing this roaring spending, using their credit cards for everything, Generation Y to some extent as well, there is a new outlook on debt, and people are less willing to get into debt. And I think that's going to be a lifelong mm-hmm. shift. That's not, I mean, they're going to be focusing on savings and on staying out of debt. They haven't been burned hard enough in the market to stay completely out.
One of the main reasons that happened, the previous caller actually brought it up, we used to have inflation, and so the issue, if you borrowed money, the loan would become worth less as time went by. And as time went by, basically, you were paying off a smaller and smaller loan because of inflation. We are in a marginally deflationary environment now where loans become more expensive as time goes by. That makes a heck of a change. We're basically in the same cycle we were in the 30s, just not as severe, but we're almost out of time, too.
Right. Yes, if you would like to contact us off the air, because we're not only a radio program, we're also folks that give advice on how to manage portfolios.
We are?
I believe so.
Is there a company name?
It is both the name of the program and the name of the company is The Personal Wealth Coach. But
wow.
If you would like to contact us locally, we have voicemail waiting.
947-1111.
Now, during any other time than the weekend, we actually have a voice that answers during business hours and real people. But if you'd like to contact us toll free, it's 800-914-PLAN, or you can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com.
We'll be back next hour.
TM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.